Okay.
Say something.
Hello?
Wait, again?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Again?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. I couldn't tell if I was listening to you.
Yeah.
Or if I was listening to you. You're so close to me.
Well, I don't want to face you. This is just as weird for you as it is for me, okay? I've never done this before.
Oh my gosh. Okay, and we're recording most of this, so all right.
I need this as a
This is gonna. Oh my gosh. And they're gonna,
oh god.
I feel like they can cut this part out. I'm recording it already right now.
Oh, I need to.
Or maybe I can cut it out. We're laughing. I don't know if it's we could be informal like this. I feel like it's not supposed to.
Yeah, I feel like it's supposed to be very formal, but at the same time, I'm trying to be natural about it. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Semi-formal.
Semi. Just a little. Just a little bit. Okay. I'm dying. I should have done a mukbang. Okay, let's start. Ready? Do you want me to go in order?
Yeah.
Okay. So today's date is May 26, 2018. It's Saturday, 1:19 p.m. My name is Ha'ani Sinicholas. I'm the interviewer, and I'm with Francesca Camacho, the interviewee. Say hello.
Hello.
I feel like let's just do like podcast.
I'm podcast style. I think that I really want to. I mean, you know, I'm gonna give you the content and everything. And I feel like that's what's important.
Yeah, and then back. I feel like the volume's supposed to be okay. You can't talk louder than that range.
Okay. Oh, that's really loud.
Yeah, you have to.
So I'll be right here.
To be like
it's right like here. Right here is fine.
Soft voice.
Okay.
And I feel like this is better because back home on Guam. This is how we talk. We just talk to each other like normal. All right.
Okay.
So, Francesca, tell us where you're from on Guam.
So, I'm from the village of Tumining. Do you need more information?
Yeah, okay. What is Tumining? Can you explain to people if they haven't been to Guam and then also, like, villages in general and then describe how home is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, like, in terms of, like, where I'm from, which is Tumining, that's more, like, central to Guam, and it's kind of more of, like, it's near, like, the touristy part where there's, like, the malls and the outlets, and it's, like, it's very different compared to the north and the south, which is more, like, in tune with nature, I guess, not as many buildings. It's just more of, like, a prominent residential area and all the nice beaches and everything.
So how many people are in your family?
Well, in my household, there's five of us, my two brothers and my parents and me. However, when people say family, of course, like I kind of have to think about my mom's side of the family and my dad's side of the family. And that just, it's a big number, over like 20 people, I would say, on one side.
Mm-hmm. And then in your family, are there like a lot of people like on both your mom and your dad's side? Do they both live on Guam? Or are they spread out throughout the world?
Yeah, there's, in terms of numbers, there's a lot on both my mom and dad's side. Like, my mom has four sisters and two brothers, and then my dad has five brothers and one sister. And they all have their kids, and then now there's grandkids. And however, like, for my mom's side, like, they're, like, here in California, and then some of my dad's side, they're out in Virginia.
Do you think that, because back home when we talk about family, right, that's not only by blood, it's also by who you're associated with or who you've grown up with. So can you kind of explain that, like how we call some people auntie and uncle, but they're not our blood auntie and uncle? And then do you still consider them close family even if they're not blood related to you?
Yeah, I agree. I believe, like, the whole auntie and uncle thing, even though you're not related, it's, like, the equivalent out here to, like, a family friend. But we won't call them by their first name because that's kind of, like disrespectful because you're older than them. And, like, these, like, aunties and uncles specifically, they're, like, people, like, we grow up with. Like, for example, like, my mom and her best friend, like, we're not related, but she's my auntie. And it's because we grew up together and just, like, it just seems like we're already so close, like, you might as well, even if it's not blood, but it's still official that you're family.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you think that differs from most of the people here in the mainland United States? Like, do you think that the relationship is the same with other people, or do you think that's just something that's kind of we grew up with on Guam? Or do you notice any difference?
I feel like there may be somewhat of a difference. I'm pretty sure that some people have like their family, friends, and everything. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, she's like a second mom to me. But I think that just because on Guam, like, our culture is just so like, centered around the family, like, despite blood, and like, it's just as long as there's like a, you built like a foundation and a connection with somebody, that's family. And like, I think it's just with that emphasis, it's more like, renowned on Guam, mm-hmm. I guess that's if you can say it like that.
And then we were talking about this earlier, but if you can explain what Manomku is and Manyanyanata, and then how that is important in the Chamorro culture.
So Manomku and Manyanyanata, it's like the elders in your culture, like the people above you, of course. And when I was thinking about it, I really think that it's somewhat lost its emphasis on the importance and emphasis on that, especially with the younger generations. But in terms of, like, I believe with my generation and the ones before me, like, we still know that there's, that they're, like, the center of, like, our culture, and they have such a really big role in it. So, like, it's important to, like, maintain that respect for them, because that's what they deserve, because that's their title, like, in our culture. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's enough for us to just show respect to our elders, like, even like when we have big gatherings, even if it's just enough to say hi to them? Or do you think that we should be kind of talking more with them? Or do you think that's something that we don't value as much, because we do value elders, but I think as time goes on, we kind of don't really sit down and talk with them or learn from them?
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, of course it's a respect thing, like, you have to, like, you know, you have to amen and fini. But I think talking to your elders, especially in this time, it's very important to get to know your elders, because, you know, it's sad, but it's part of life, and they are going to, like, pass on and everything. And it's important to, like, they've gone through, like, a different life compared to us that we'll never know. But the only way we could, like, have, like, a glimpse of it is through their, like, their stories and their experiences. And that's, like, some way, like, to keep, you know, the culture alive. So I don't think it's just enough to just see them, like, at a random, like, fiesta and amen. I think it's important to just establish your place in, like, if your place with them, for example, like, offering to go get them food at the table, or, like, a drink, or just sitting down if they're not, like, talking to anybody, and just have a conversation. I think it, and it also, like, proves to them, like, okay, they're very, like, they are, like, in line with all those values that, like, we were taught as a kid, to respect your family, and, like, in ways, like, not just, like play an active role with the family.
So, like, going off of that, do you think that it's enough for us when we were growing, because me and you both, we went to school on Guam our whole lives, do you think it's enough for us to just learn about these histories in a textbook, or whatever people tell us is enough? Or do you think that we should, like what you were saying, we should actively go to our elders and learn these oral histories? And then also, do you think that an oral history as a type of education is devalued on Guam? Because I know most of us are kind of, we look more in textbooks, and we kind of learn in that linear way. We just learn in school, textbooks, that's it. But I feel like with what you're saying, do you think it's important to also, like, learning through oral histories and learning through talking is also important?
Yeah, that's important. And with the textbook thing in school, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like kind of like an Americanized, like, education. Like, we only have, like, if we're lucky, like, one or two sentences in a textbook about us. So that's, like, all we, like, really know about Guam. It's more like learning about American history and everything. And I think there's just something very special about, like, hearing about it from, like your family, like, how they grew up, and, like, what they did for food, and, like, how they made the food, and just their way of life, because, what's the word for it? Oh, I lost my train of thought. I don't know. It's just, it's really not enough. And I think that when you build that, like, foundation by actively, like, asking, like, your grandparents, for example, to, like, oh, like, what was it like when you were my age, and we can talk about it, it just, I think there's, like, so much, like, a familial connection to that, like, that would make you want to be, like, oh, I want to, like, I want to do what, like, my grandma did. Like, I want to be able to pass down her traditions to my kids and then to their kids and just keep, like, this family tradition alive. And that, I think that's really important. And that's just not something that you can learn in school.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So I guess our next question would be, why did you decide to move from Guam to the mainland United States?
I decided to do that because I wanted to receive higher education by going to college out here.
And I feel like it's a big thing back home, and you can kind of touch on this more, of kind of, I guess, why do people find value in moving so far and spending so much money and investing in an education that's outside of home, and why they think it's more important to gain that education outside of Guam than instead of staying back home? And then what are kind of the perceptions of people who do stay on Guam and just continue to have education there compared to those who move to the U.S.?
I think it's just, with me, it's like, if you have the opportunity to move out and invest in, like, yourself and what you want to do in life, and the opportunity is only available in the U.S., I honestly think that it's for you in the end. It's a very great, like, chance. Like, there are so many things that I've been exposed to out here in terms of, like, education, like, other cultures, and just, like, life out here, that's just, it's somewhat of a culture shock, and it's so much more different than Guam because they just have more, like, chances to, like, branch out and see, like, you know, maybe you can't, like, follow through with this, like, major, I guess, so maybe you can do something else. There's just a wide variety of things that you can do, and, like, which is good because it gives you a chance to explore, like, is this really what I want to do with my life? And if not, it's okay, I have a backup because they still have the resources for that. And, like, it's not to, like, discredit, like, Guam's education. It's very good, and there are opportunities for certain fields. However, there's just more, there's like, specific fields of, like, career fields that, like, that are only available out here, which is fine because it's like, in the end, it's going to benefit you to get that experience and get that chance to do something with your life that you're happy with, instead of just being stuck, like, and not do something that you're really content with and really want to stick to. And in terms of the I guess you would say, like, the stigma about people that stay home and pursue an education, I feel that it's like, they're just staying home because they don't feel like going out here. They don't want the real college experience, and, like, they're just so tied to their family, like, they don't think they can do it. And also it could be, like, a money thing, but I just think when people say, like, oh yeah, no, they're just on Guam, like, they didn't want to move out here, they kind of devalue, like, their, like, decision to stay on Guam and pursue higher education there, because it's home. It's not taking, like, the next step, which comes with, like, going to college and, like, I guess increasing, like, your independence, because when you're out here, you're not with your parents, and you're, like, maybe you have some family, but you're basically on your own, like, trying to figure out, like, how to become, like, a real adult and, like, get a job and everything. But on Guam, like, you still have, like, that support system and to fall back on if, like, things don't work out. So I feel like that, like, they feel like it's just, like, the easy way to, like, do, like, to attain higher education.
Do you think that moving to the States, and whether it just be to move out here for opportunity-wise or to get a higher education degree, master's and stuff, do you think that that makes, when the people come back to Guam, if they do, it makes them more well-rounded and holistic and kind of more engaged in the culture? Or do you find that people are still just the same or complacent, and nothing in the U.S. really changed their mind about things? Or how do you feel about your experience coming to the States? Do you feel like you appreciate Guam more and your culture and your family more, or is it just the same?
I really do have a newfound appreciation for Guam. I think when I was back home before I came out for college, I kind of took advantage of the whole family and beautiful paradise setting of Guam. And then when I came out here, I did not feel like I was home at all. But I appreciate, like, the chance for me to come out here, because the way I see it is, I'm getting, like, my higher education and, like, pursuing my like desire to be a lawyer, and I want to do it right the first time, so when I'm ready I can go back home and make Guam a better place by receiving this education out here, but bringing it to Guam, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna ask you something, but I forgot what I was gonna say. Do you, at coming out here, do you find other Chamorro people easily, or, because you also go to school in California, do you find that it's easy to find any Chamorro people, let alone Pacific Islanders, at your school or in California in general? And if so, where do you and where do you not?
I feel like it's very rare to find Chamorro people out here, or even Pacific Islanders. And I think it's funny because you can tell like when you, like, you're in the presence of an Islander just because the way they up, like they bring themselves, and sometimes even like from the clothes they wear, like how they dress and just how they talk sometimes, you can really see it. I'm not sure where I like normally find them. It's probably like at the restaurants sometimes, or when you see like you're just in a parking lot and you see like, for example, like a Guam sticker, and you just, I don't know, you start to build like this connection with like a stranger, but it's just this fact that you both are like from Guam, you already feel like family. So like, but it's still, it is really rare to find people like that out here because California is such a big place and there's just so many cultures, and sometimes you could be mistaken too. But we're such a small population, even though there's a lot of us out here in California and like other parts of the US, it's still, we're still a minority. So it's very difficult to find those people, and which is why like when you, once you find them, it's like you have the, you build that instant connection, and you, it just makes you feel more like you're at home.
And when you tell people that you're Chamorro or you're from Guam, what do you usually hear them respond with, or do they have any kind of implications about Chamorro people in general when you meet them?
Yeah, once I say I'm from Guam, I always get this like this skeptical facial expression from them, because odds are like they don't know where we are. So I have to explain to them where we are in like the world, and then it mostly starts off with like stereotypical questions like, how did you get to Guam, and like, are you see your English is really well, and what's your language, do you have a visa out here? Because people don't know that we are a U.S. territory. Our predominant language is English, and we're basically very Americanized on the island, except we're just small. So there's a lot of like misconceptions about Guam because they think we're still stuck in this primitive state and they don't know how to take it, so they're just shocked. And I understand, because they don't really teach much about Guam here, so all I can do is just entertain their questions and educate them about it.
How do you feel about, because both of us went to the same high school, we kind of every year it was a history that was kind of either based on Europe or the United States, and that was it, and we learned like a good amount about the U.S. We took AP classes, so mm-hmm. we kind of, I think, know a little bit more than some people out here who grew up and lived in the United States. But moving and knowing that, when you came here, how did you feel when you would meet people who didn't know anything about Guam or had wrong ideas about Guam or didn't even know any history about them, when you know so much more about their history?
Especially when I came out here, I was just very offended by it, because it's like, it just kind of like seems like the U.S. isn't giving us the credit that we deserve, especially for like how much we do for the U.S. And I would easily get offended by it, especially with the stereotypical comments and questions, because it's just like, I feel like you should know like your history about like everything that has to do with the U.S. and we are part of the U.S., but they just make it seem like we're in this whole other world separate from like the colonized America. But like, but over time, like, I had to not be so sensitive about it, because there really are just some people that just don't know much about it, and I don't think it's my place to just get angry every single time I come by like somebody like that. So now, like, I see it less in a negative sense and use it more as like an opportunity to educate people about where I'm from. That way they can leave the conversation knowing a little bit more about the U.S. too, and more about Guam. But, you know, if it does get to, like, a joking, like, negative, prejudicial, like, conversation, that's where, you know, I feel like all of us Shmore people draw the line. Like, it's like a disrespect thing.
Mm-hmm. And then in California in general, there's a big Chamorro population. I think one of the biggest other than Texas and other places outside of Guam. Mm-hmm. And Chamorro people, not only from Guam, but, you know, Saipan, Rota, all the other Northern Mariana Islands. So knowing that, but then at the UC schools, we see maybe less than 5 at each. But when you do, there are Chamorro people who came from Guam instead of the Chamorro people that grew up and were raised in the U.S. So how do you feel about that? How do you feel about... Do you feel that we're very underrepresented in knowing that the U.S., or not the U.S., sorry, that California holds a good amount of Chamorro people? And why do you think that is, that you don't really see a lot of Chamorro faces, or people don't grow up knowing other Chamorro people if they were born and raised in California? Like, how did you feel that you were very underrepresented going into UCI?
Was absolutely.
It a good, like... Was it a good transition for you? Well, you're always here in San Diego anyway.
Yeah. No, I did definitely feel underrepresented, especially, like, during my first week there, all I saw were Americans and Chinese people and Middle Eastern, and I just wanted to look around, like, where are the Pacific Islanders around here? Because, you know, I came from an island which was predominantly Pacific Islanders, and then just to come here, and it's, like, it's very... shocking, because to, like, not really pass by somebody that you have, like, you can relate to. And I think that's what, like what's the word, like, it increases, like, the amount of, like, homesickness, like, I feel, because it just makes me feel like I'm a little bit more alone, because I don't really have anybody to relate to about that.
Mm-hmm. And did you ever feel, like, from your personal experience, discouraged to the point where you didn't feel like you belonged in this institution of higher education, or did you ever feel that you wanted to move back home?
Yes. Yeah. There was a point in my freshman year where I just felt like I just came out here just to come out here and to get away from Guam, and I just didn't feel like I found my place, especially with the people and the cultures around. So there was a point where I just thought, you know, maybe I did try it and this isn't for me, like, I want to go home. But, you know, I decided to stick it out. And, I mean, lucky thing I did, because I found out what I truly want to do. And now, like, because of that, because I stuck it out, I plan on staying here for even a longer time after, like, my undergrad.
Do you think you could have stayed despite the all of that negativity if it weren't for the help of your family and friends? Or did you always find that you could lean back on your Chamorro friends, Chamorro family, etc.? Did that help you a lot?
Yeah, especially when there were times where I wanted to go home, and it was especially bad my freshman year. I just felt like I'm so disconnected from, like, my family, and I just don't know what to do, because I've been so used to just leaning on them and seeing them whenever, and it just kind of freaked me out. So every time when that happens, you know, I would ask, like, my friends, like, hey, can we hang out? Like, I just miss you guys. I don't really want to be around, like, people here. I just want to be around, like, I want to have, like, vibes from home. And that's even, like, with my immediate family out here too. Like, they'll know when I'm feeling homesick, when I just, like, urge them to please come get me, because it's just, there's times out here where I don't feel like I'm at home. Like, I don't feel comfortable being around here. And the things that I'm comfortable around were stuff that I grew up with, which was Chamorro people.
What events, I know we went to PIFA, do you think those type of events helped you? And then, I guess San Diego too, has a really big Chamorro community, other than your friends you knew in high school. Do you think that those big, large scale events helped you too? And how important do you think that is overall, in like, if other people, like, if other people were to hear about these events, do you think that it kind of educates them too about it, while also helping you not be as homesick? Or what are your feelings about that? What's your experience with those type of events?
Yeah, I think especially with PIFA, I think that was just, like, some type of, like, way to, like, it's like our Chamorro village away from home, you know? Like, because there'd be like, you know, our friends, when, like, they would, like, come out to PIFA. It's just a chance for all of us to come together, because we're not home, so we can experience this home feel together that's away from Guam. And Yeah, I like it when people, like, people who aren't Chamorro get to, like, hear about this stuff, because then they get immersed somewhat in the culture, like, when they put on, like, the cultural dances or, like, the long lines for the food, but they find out it's delicious. It's just a chance to, like, make them see, like, what we grew up with to some extent without actually being there. And, like, I think it's really great for people to, like, experience that, because, you know, we are a part of the U.S. and this is just something that's, like, I feel like it's just something very unique to the U.S., like Guam's lifestyle, because it's not how people act out here. So
if you haven't some Chamorro people who were born and raised in the United States, do you find that there's a big lifestyle difference that maybe your upbringing that's kind of different from you growing up on Guam compared to theirs growing up and living in the United States?
Absolutely. I can even see it with my cousins who moved out here when they were little kids. I mean, we as, like, kids who grew up on Guam, we were used to, like, our fun days would be, like, going to the beach and, like, staying there for hours, getting sunburnt and whatnot, and then going home for, like, a barbecue. But I think, like, you know, out here kids, like, there's so many things to do for, like, little kids with all, like Disneyland and Six Flags and, like, all the malls and everything. I just think we were just more in tune with, like, maybe it sounds kind of cheesy, but we're, like, more in with nature, because that's, like, that's all we kind of had to, like, fall back on in a sense for fun. And I, like, don't regret that at all, like, even though, you know, everybody wants to do, like, the Disneyland and stuff. But it was just very different, especially with how they act around, like people and, like, with family and stuff, because, I don't know, it's just... They just had, like, more of, like, an independent, like, view of, like, life compared to us, where we're just, like, we're very collective. Like, we're all about the family. But then, like, when I came out here and saw, like, how my cousins acted, it's just, like, it just, I could tell, like, there was a sense, like, that they just didn't, like, you can tell they weren't really, like, immersed in the Chamorro culture.
Hearing what you're saying, when growing up on Guam, even everyone, when I hear their experiences, it really is, like, centered around nature and land and everything. And I don't think we valued that as much as when we were children. But, like, now you're 28 years old. Do you find that you have a bigger appreciation and understanding that growing up on Guam is important for kind of fostering that Chamorro culture, even though you could be in the United States? Like, most of these Chamorro people who live out here, they still have fiestas. Maybe some of them could or hear Chamorro, but do you think that it's important to have the land ties as well? Because I think in most of indigenous cultures that land is really important in your culture. Do you think that still holds today, even though there's some of them who live out here in the United States? Or
personally, I really believe that it holds true to me. I just feel like our culture and its connection to the land, it keeps us grounded. It makes us, it kind of puts us in our place to say, like, you know, like, you're a part of this world, and, like, nature has so much to offer to you, so it's important you take care of it. And that's, like in the future, like, that's one thing I want my kids to get used to, and I want my kids to grow up in that like, land, Chamorro, traditional, like, culture compared to out here where it's mostly, like, skyscrapers and, like, attractions and everything. I want them to be in tune to, like, I want them to grow up how I did, like, on the beach, and just see how that is, because I feel like you get a whole new, like, a different perspective on life compared to the people out here, because you're just so immersed in it and you just didn't really care about all, like, the trivial things and materialistic items that you really want to, like, take advantage of it. And that's why I feel like it's just super important to, like, maintain the land and make sure, like, that the beauty, like, we preserve the beauty of Guam that it is already for, like, the future generations to enjoy it too.
What is, if people don't know who are listening, Guam is one of the most strategic locations for Navy and Army bases in the Pacific Ocean. If not, we are the largest one. What is your experience growing up with, or even now with, the military on Guam? How has that affected your family or you and your opinions on just the military in general?
I think my view of the military on Guam, it's like building with, like, the bases and everything. I just I think I don't really agree with like them like intruding on our land in a sense. And you know, I appreciate all like the service and like everything that the US military does for us, but I feel like there's like a fine line and where you need to understand that this is not really like your home, and like you need to respect it, especially with when it comes to like tearing down like areas which are very like ancestral and like very, you need to respect the land to build a base. And also, like, I don't know, like other experiences with the military on Guam is just seeing them everywhere, always hearing like the fighter jets in the sky. And it's just very, I don't know, it's just like we really grew up around the military, like they were always everywhere, so it's kind of hard to avoid that. And then, you know, of course with the military buildup, it's just only increased like by a lot.
Do you think Chamorro's in the States? I know in San Diego we have Pendleton and there's other military things, but if they were, let's say there was a Chamorro who grew up in Minnesota or whatever, and they're not used to seeing a large military presence, and if they were to come to Guam, do you think they'd be shocked? Because for me, at least, I've seen tanks driven on the street during parades, and you're just so used to hearing fighter jets flying by. So how do you think that's impacted your childhood, and do you think that this is... Because I never realized this growing up, but do you think that's something we've just become kind of, not oblivious to, but we just kind of don't see it anymore? Because, I don't know, what is your experience?
I feel like we kind of really did get a little desensitized to it, because they were around, like you said, even for, like, the Guam Liberation Day Parade, there has to be, like, a boatload of, like, military people walking down, and then the tanks and the... And then the planes, and it's just their presence on Guam has, I feel like it's really affected us in a way where we just, it's like common knowledge to like to hear those sounds and to see those people, and which is kind of sad, because we kind of just, I wish we would just kind of not have had that extent, like that big of a presence of the military on our island, because that's just not really what our culture is about. So I feel like it tends to like go against each other, like our culture and then the US military, because it just doesn't really mesh well together. So, but for us, it's just kind of become like common to see that stuff. So it's something that we kind of just are forced to live with.
And I think it's, do you think that this militarization has become kind of like seeping into our culture, because there are a lot of Chamorro people who do enlist in the army, and we do have the largest per capita enlistment? So do you think, have you experienced that with your family and or your friends, and why do you think that a lot of Chamorro people choose to go this route? Is it because of history, or there's no other route for them just because of all the, you know, there's no other way because of all of these pressures from what the U.S. has done. So what do you think about that?
I think military has really, like you said, it's seeped into our culture. I have so many friends who, right out of high school, they enlisted. And, I mean, that's good for them. And I feel like sometimes a lot of Chamorros want to go into the military for the benefits. But the benefits, it's for their future, to secure their future for their kids and their wives and husbands, and to build that foundation for them. And I guess maybe to some extent it's to protect our freedom, but I don't see that. I don't know. When I ask some people like, oh, why did you decide to enlist? And the common answer is for the benefits, because I want my kids to be able to do what they please and yeah.
Do you think this, because there are a lot of people who enlist in the military, do you think that this kind of has influenced the family dynamic on Guam? Because I know a lot of families, their parents or siblings or significant others are constantly deployed. So have you found that kind of, maybe that's why some people are kind of shifting away from, you know, being close-knit with their families or something like that?
Actually, yeah. I feel like because... it kind of interrupts the whole family dynamic, because we're centered around, like, it's important to, like, build that relationship. But there's some families who have kids, like, that like they haven't really been around their dad because their dad was deployed for how many months out of the year. So they don't really have that relationship with them like to fall back on. So it really does affect like the values that we hold true for our culture because they clash. Yeah.
And for you growing up, if you just like remember when you were back home and just doing your daily routines, have you ever, despite like maybe hearing a fighter jet fly by or seeing, I don't know, some type of military vessel, have you ever interacted with anyone from the military, or have you found that you ever did when you were growing up? And if so, what was that like? And how do you think that's impacted your opinions of military presence coming into the States for school?
I think the only amount of interaction that I have with military people would be with my uncle when he was working on Guam for the military. But I mean, if I'm being honest, when I would see like the amount of like military people on Guam and the tanks and the jets, it just kind of, in a sense, bothers me because that's not my paradise. My paradise isn't a beach, but there's tanks like to the left of you in the parking lot, like I guess like something like that. It's just, it kind of takes away from like the serenity that Guam has, and just by like they really assert their presence in our island, and it's just, for me, it just kind of doesn't make me feel like I'm at home. It kind of just makes me feel a little uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And for most of, like, because we're young, the younger generation of tomorrows, we do go out. It's the same as other young kids in the United States. We go to clubs, we have parties, mm-hmm. and things. So Francesca was saying, in the northern part of the island, it's more modern and contemporary, so there are more clubs there. So for me, at least, there is a big amount of military people who come from the bases to come and also party, and it's, you see more people of color, in mostly black, and then some white people. And I guess for me, that was my only exposure to black and white people growing up on Guam. Do you remember growing up with any military people or black and white people in general? Like, what was the ethnicity breakdown for people your age growing up or your peers?
I rarely saw like a white person in school. Maybe there was like one or two, but like you said, most of the people that you can tell are like for the military and from the United States, they were around like the Tumon area, which has all the clubs and all like the shopping areas, because it's like basically like a mall for them. So they just, you know, go around. And yeah, my experiences with them while going to clubs, it's not really pleasant, because every time like I would go out, it was a bunch of them getting really intoxicated to the point where it's very uncomfortable to be around because they're just being belligerent.
Has this implicated any of your perceptions of these type of people? Not these type of people, but military people coming to the States, or when you were encountering more black and white people in the States going to school?
Yeah, in a sense. I guess you would say, in my honest opinion, that I kind of stereotype them in a way, because that's the extent to how I saw them. Like, I saw like my Chamorro people as being like very centered around the family and like staying controlled, calm, collected, and themselves. But then when I see, like, when I'm out and I see all these people, it's just, I guess, yes, they're trying to have a good time, but sometimes it gets out of hand, and just, that's not something I want to associate with. So it really did affect me when I came to the U.S. because I just decided not really to associate myself with them. If I did, then I did, which is fine, but I would never really actively go out to, like, want to get to know them, because I just kind of felt like that's not my crowd.
Do you think, as a culture, the Chamorro people kind of uphold the same kind of biases, or do you think it's more of a younger generation thing, or have you noticed that even, with the elders, that there are some kind of biases and stereotypes because of maybe the war or military or just the impact of the U.S. Occupying Guam?
Yeah, there are definitely similar biases, especially with, like, my grandparents who grew up in the war, and they had just... They had their experiences with it, which were very, like, you know, detrimental to them. And of course, they did develop their own like perceptions on how they saw them, which I guess is it's fair because that's how they saw them. Yeah.
Do you? There's this thing, I don't know if you know, it's just basically called intergenerational trauma where you experience. So let's say your grandparents, most of our grandparents were alive during the war, during Japanese occupation. Mm-hmm. And then basically this idea is that that kind of never ends and you feel it go down like through your family line. So your mom experienced it in some way and you may have experienced it some way, whether it be going to school and, you know, it's basically kind of going to a private school, me and you, it's kind of militarized in a sense. We all have to wear a uniform. There's strict rules we have to abide by, certain type of education we have to do. So have you felt any kind of implications from that time, from your grandparents' life, whether it be direct or indirect? Because for me, at least, that's what I felt. I also, too, my grandparents were biased. I feel like they didn't really want to talk about their experiences that much. And because of that, we're all very technology-centered, very contemporary base. We don't really think about our culture that much. Do you think that's the same for you, or?
I think, yeah. I experienced it, you know, like how you said with the private schools and everything. But I also got like, I forgot what you said. When my great grandma, she would tell me like stories about the war, and like what she went through is just very traumatic, and it just made me think like, why did these people like do this to my family? Like, it just makes me think like what was it like? What was it all worth it for them? Like, what did like what was the things that came out for them in the end? And it just made me think about every like the U.S. in such a different light, in a way that I gravitate towards my people far more than anybody else, because that's just the people that I have good positive vibes from, and not just this population that kind of ruined my family when they were in the war.
And then I think a lot of kids growing up right now don't understand the term colonization in context to Guam, kind of. They think of it in like as if it took place in the past, like the Spanish, mm-hmm. and they think it kind of happened and it still hasn't continued today. So I know there's traces of that still present on Guam, and one example I can think of is how heavy Catholicism is on our island. So have you ever thought about, because you're practicing Catholic too, mm-hmm. have you ever thought about that and how that was influenced on Guam, and now you practice it, and that how it's such a big thing on Guam? And what do you think about how Catholicism is like such a huge part of Chamorro culture?
I've actually really thought about this, because when you think about it, Catholicism is not part of the Chamorro culture. And I actually did a little research a while back saying how, like, the Chamorro culture has become such a mixture of different things. And, like, people believe, like, you know, in Catholicism, but then they also have strong ties to their culture. And those clash because, you know, we have the whole concept of, like, the Tautomonas, and then there's God. And it's like, who do you believe? You can't believe in all of this. But I choose to. And I never really thought, because, you know, we grew up being Catholic and everything, how much, like the Catholic, like, the Spanish, when they brought Catholicism, like, it really had, a negative impact, because it's something that they forced onto the people that they didn't want, but had to do so, like, for the sake of survival. But, I mean, in a way, it made me kind of think about Catholicism differently, but it didn't make me want to stop, because it's what I grew up with. I went 12 years of Catholic education, and I firmly believe in it, and it's become a part of who I am. So I just choose to think that I'm like, that's like just a part of my culture.
What are your feelings about when people, like you were just saying, Chamorro culture is so heavily influenced by other cultures, and when I try to talk to people and explain, whether it be our cuisines or our language, there's so many influences from other cultures that they kind of question the authenticity of our culture, and that there's not really anything that's set Chamorro. What are your opinions on that?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people have their misconceptions because they kind of start to lump us together with Hawaiians. That's something that I've noticed, especially with some of the stuff that we do on Guam. Like, I heard through this movie that there's not a set, like, we don't know how the Chamorros originally danced. So, because that tradition was lost through colonization, so they had to borrow from all their cultures, like Polynesia, and then there was also, and then, like, Tahitian dancing, and they all, like, combined it, and then they made it into this type of thing that they say, oh, no, you guys, like, you're I see, like, how you're dancing, like, you guys are Hawaiian, but it's like, no, we're not. It's just, we've become, like, we kind of lost our way, and we had to try and pick up the pieces of what's left of it, and by grabbing up with other cultures. So, I think
so. I kind of want you to explain this, and what your experience is with this. Just the idea of being Micronesian on Guam, and how that's kind of a negative connotation. I think that's an important issue that a lot of people don't talk about. Kind of want to see your opinion on it, because a lot of people on Guam are just Micronesian, with just Chickies people, Yuppies, Pohnpei, and northern Micronesian islands, but they tend to separate themselves from being Micronesian, although we are. We're not Polynesian or, you know, Melanesian. So do you identify as Micronesian, and if so, why, and what do you think about all of these negative stories that are being told on Guam in the newspapers, or what people think about?
I mean, you know, growing up, my parents and my family never told me, you know, you're Micronesian. It's just, you're Chamorro. Like, they didn't really, like, register in our minds that, like, we are, because I didn't really learn this until, like, a while back, like, in high school. I'm like, oh, we are a part of Micronesia, when they would have, like, the Chamorro festivals and everything, and Guam would be under, like, the Micronesian festival, so it's obvious. But I feel like, you know, people just see Micronesians as in Chukis and Yapis and the others, like, in a negative light because of all the crime that goes on. You know, you always see in the newspapers in PDN how there was a sexual assault, or there was, like, a robbery happening, and there was a Chukis guy involved. And I guess we just don't want to associate ourselves with, like, that, like, ruining the island in that way with all the crime rates and everything. So they just, in a sense, consider them outsiders, and we just, like, haven't been able to, like, make, like, a connection with all the other Micronesians in a way where we can all be, like, one collective, like, unit. So we just, in a sense, like, just want to separate from that and not want to get involved because of the things that they see around that all the Micronesians do on our island. And it's just, like, they think they're ruining, like, who we are and what they're doing to our land because they're all there.
Do you think it's important that we start recognizing that we are Micronesian, although there's already a struggle in trying to, also I want to know your opinion about this, trying to separate Asians from Pacific Islanders, that's a big thing. And growing up, did you identify as Asian, or was it strictly Pacific Islander? And then what is your experience with that coming to the States, but also more at school?
I really think we do have to start associating ourselves with Micronesia, because there's always a question of, like, oh, our culture is dying, we don't know who we are anymore, and, like, once we find out, we don't want to accept it. So I think it's, you know, if we're really trying to, like, get back on this path to, like, reviving, like, and reliving, like, the culture that was, like, lost, it starts with figuring out, yes, we are Micronesian, and, like, let's go from there and continue to see, like, what are some other things that we could do to bring back, like, who we were in the past. And in terms of the whole Asian and Pacific Island thing, I never associated myself with Asia. Yeah, we live close there, but I've never practiced anything that has to do with Asia, as in Japan or China or Vietnam. But I think it's just weird, because when people out here say, like, oh, so you're a part of Asia, right? And it's like, no, we're not. We're, like, our own separate area. We're in the Pacific. We're Pacific Islanders. So I just thought, even, like, sometimes in the SATs, like, the system, like, the government that's in charge of that, like, when you circle or bubble in what your race or ethnicity is, Asian is lumped with Pacific Islander. Like, sometimes, and it's just, like, it would always make me think, like, I'm Pacific Islander, but I'm not Asian, so does this apply to me still? But, you know, of course I would have to do it. So it's just, I never really understood why people associate us with Asia.
do you think it's because we have a different grasp of, we think of Asia as kind of something like in geographic terms, but, or do you think it's because they think we're the same culture, or do you think it's because maybe skin color or something along those lines? Why do you think people kind of lump us in one big category when if you actually like, even if you just kind of informally hang out with them, or even if you study it in textbooks, there's not really a set connection between these? Or do you think it's convenience? What do you think is the reason why?
I actually do think that it's culture, because we're both collectivist cultures, and where our opinions and our decisions are affected by the ones that are around us, as in our family. Whereas America, it's very individualist culture, where their decisions are their decisions and they're very independent, where I think that's just how it's similar cultures and upbringing. I think that's why they seem to think that we have so much in common, and we do, but at the same time we're all different. China isn't the same as Japan, and Japan isn't the same thing as Guam, and it's just, I think there just needs to be a time where you need to separate, you need to see that every culture, even though we are all collectivists, we all have our own unique things about each other that must separate us from the rest.
Do you think that, because again, growing up on Guam, you already know that growing up you are a Pacific Islander and you are a brown person of color. Do you think that is different from people who are growing up in the States who aren't Chamorro, when they grow up learning that they're Asian/Pacific Islander? Do you think that has some kind of effect on their identity as well, or has that kind of influenced you, or kind of challenged you to think that way too when you went to school, when you're in school,
out here?
I
kind of saw myself differently. I just never thought that I could be I never really saw myself as a person of color in the Pacific Islander community, but I mean, you can really tell the difference once you're out here. And I don't think it affects the Chamorro statesiders out here, because they grew up into the culture, so they kind of get assimilated with it, because they've been here since they were kids. So they kind of become, they become an Americanized Chamorro. Yes, it's in their blood, but they were raised a different way. Whereas us, it's in our blood, and we were raised as Chamorros.
Can you kind of explain what your opinion is, along with maybe the popular opinion on Guam, between attending a public school, whether it be middle school, elementary, high school, compared to a private school, and what that kind of, it kind of reflects if you do attend these certain institutions, and which one you went to?
So I went to an all-girl private school, and there was definitely tension in throughout middle school and high school as to how we view public schoolers and private schoolers. So private schoolers were always the negative stigma with us is that we're all pretentious and we're all rich and we all are mean to everybody and just don't really care about anybody if you didn't go to a private school. And whereas some private schoolers view public schooler as being rebellious, they're very low income, and they're just into all, they had a bad reputation, getting into alcohol and whatnot, especially at a young age. So it's just, there's a divide of being a divide between an upper class status and a lower class status, where you don't really associate it with them. So you stick to what you are a part of, and then you hear what they think about the lower class, and it just kind of influences your decision. And I mean, if I'm being honest, that's how I grew up. I used to see you went to public school, so you guys must be all that, which was of course wrong, because now I have a bunch of public school friends and they're not at all how I thought that they would be.
And it's very different compared to the States, right? That a lot of public schools out here are so well, they have good reputations. Mm-hmm. A lot of people strive to go to public schools out here in the States, but then compared on Guam, public schools are the complete opposite. And also, I just thought of this right now. Do you think it's interesting how this is kind of public school versus private school is a social and economic divide between Chamorro people, but also there's again that Catholic element in private schools because you can't do that in public schools. Mm-hmm. Do you think that kind of also creates another elitist thing, because you're also dividing kids' education too based on the money they can afford and whatnot, because a lot of people do believe public schools don't have the same education as private schools do, and most of us in private schools, which is just like the statistics, do end up going to school outside of Guam, like go to the States. Like, what are your thoughts on that? It's like a big it's a big epiphany if you think about
Can you repeat that?
I think just don't you think it's interesting how you too, like, people when we were going to school we didn't really think that much about it, but then it, like, right now us going to college looking down on like high school institutions or just in general, you could see that the public school, like, it's just there's no care in it, whereas private schools are already set just because you have money, so then it's already dividing more people based on wealth, but then you're also dividing, you're depriving these kids of education based on their money, and then you're also saying that if you go to this private school that fosters Catholicism and then fosters this kind of non-Chamorro idea, then you're going to go some places in life.
Yeah,
I'm just mind blown.
Right now. It's just, like, I think about, like, how our, you know, when you see, like, how Academy looked, it's just, it was really nice, and you can tell, like, they had, like, funding for it, but then, like, you look at the public schools, and it's like, oh, this place is, like, kind of dirty, it's kind of, like, run down, and it's just, like, so you kind of have this thing. And I agree with how you say, like, if you went to this high school knowing that they, like, they had a pretty good education and you were, it was Catholic education, then that's what, you already have a leg up compared to, like, the people that went to public school, which is not necessary. It should not be like that. People should not think like that because, you know, education is education. And we both, I mean, like, they didn't, like, have, like, theology classes like we did. So I just think they think of, like you said, it's kind of like they look down on them because they didn't get that Catholic education, which is, I mean, not necessarily true because there was also, like, CCD classes and confirmation classes. So we were basically both still living in the faith. But with us, it was just required and it was a grade.
Do you think also, too, I'm thinking about, like, basically economy, social status, or whatever. Do you think that in choosing to go to public school or private school, I noticed some people, it's kind of this ongoing cycle of families. Not necessarily that it's a bad thing, but if your parents went to public school, then you went to public school, and so on and so forth. And it kind of, like, for me, for most people and families, it seems like they're limiting their social mobility and moving up in places, and it's just kind of this plateau of family. Like, there's no better thing for them, and kids kind of feel like there's nowhere else to go. Like, it's just this ongoing cycle of things.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really our decision. Like, for me, like, you know, I would have gone to Academy anyways, but I, like, the one reason why I actually went was because my parents forced me to, because that was my mom's alma mater, that was my grandma's alma mater, my cousins went there, my aunties went there, and then, like, now the same thing with Father Duenas, where that was my dad's alma mater. Now my brother's there, and then my younger brother's going to go there. So I guess it's, like, this whole idea of, like, they want us to have the education that they had because they saw that as being, like, the best thing that you can receive on Guam, because it was, like, in a sense, like, it was higher, it was, like, high, like, had higher standards and compared to, like, public school, which may not be the case when I think about it.
It's just interesting to, like, think about when we're talking through. Okay, and I think the last question, because we're almost already at the hour mark, I want to ask you is, a lot of people in any culture, any ethnicity, there's some kind of defining factor as to what makes them that certain ethnicity. Like, a lot of people think that you have to know the language, you have to grow up there, you have to do all these things to be Chinese, Ethiopian, whatever the ethnicity or maybe. So what do you think, in your opinion, it doesn't have to be right or wrong, because there's no right or wrong answer. What do you think defines being a Chamorro person? If there was a military person who grew up on Guam and they were raised there their whole life, do you think that makes them Chamorro? If they were living on Guam for 5 years, moved to the States, does that make them Chamorro? Just knowing the language, and how does that situate you in the culture as well?
Okay, if I had to describe, like, Chamorro culture in, like, one view, it would be the value of family orientation. You don't, I, yes, have, like, learning the traditions and having, like learning the language and knowing it, those are big factors into determining which culture you are. But for me, it's if you have those values instilled into you from the get-go and you grew up around it and around like the people especially, that's, I feel like that's what makes us Chamorro, because you can learn it all, but then have like this mindset, like, I'm still American, but I know these things. That doesn't make you a part of it just because you learn the language. Like, an American person can learn Chamorro and then they can't say that they're Chamorro because they're not. And you just have to, it's the upbringing too, because, what was I gonna say? I don't know, like, that's how I see it, because we have like all these connections to family. And there's, like, I have so many, like, people that I consider family that I'm not related to, because we have, it's important about building those relationships and connections with people. Like, you know, oh, hey, could you help me out with, like, with my project? Because, you know, I think you can be the right person. It's like, yeah, okay, and in exchange, I'll make you banana bread. So, like, I think it's just about this whole idea of like love and family, which is very important for our culture, because it's like, you know, our culture is constantly like being like torn apart and dying and being switched like every way, but I feel like the constant throughout the whole thing that has like stayed with it is family.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and one more question for just to situate whoever's listening to this, whatever year it may be or wherever they're from. Just where Chamorro culture is today, just, it doesn't have to be Chamorro people anywhere, it doesn't have to be on Guam, it could be in the States, but what do you think is the reputation of Chamorro language today? Like, what is the, is it thriving? Are people learning it? What do you think about it? Or even like Chamorro traditions in general, do you think there's like a movement towards learning the language, and why do you think a lot of people don't speak Chamorro, basically? Because I think language is a big part of culture, but a lot of Chamorro people don't know the culture at all, or just know maybe just sayings or some words. And stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think, I think there was like some type of movement, like, you know, the Jarao Culture Academy phase. Like, I feel like that was like a good attempt to try and get, like, to instill those like cultural traditions into the kids. And I think that's very important, at least to start at a young age, because see, now we didn't really start out young, and I don't know how to speak. I could, you know, of course I could speak like certain phrases and everything, but I can 100% say I do not speak it fluently. I do not understand it, and that honestly has had an effect with like how I view myself as a Chamorro, because I personally don't feel Chamorro enough. Because all of us grew up with English as our first language. Like, ever since the Americans came to Guam, they instilled this idea that they want what's like something that's better than what we already have, when we were already thriving on our own. And so they forced English onto us now, after being like Catholicism thrusted onto us. And it's just like, we, with all these like these phases of colonization, it really did like make us lose our way, and the culture, if in my opinion, it's dying, and especially with the language. And I thought about this earlier, saying like, you know, you have to know the language to, in a sense, to be able to call yourself Chamorro, because you need to be able to speak it and be able to pass it on to the generation. So that's why I say it's dying, because we're not speaking it, we're not actively practicing it in our communities. Everybody speaks English. They don't really have Chamorro language classes in like the high schools and the middle schools and the elementary schools. And I just think that's very like, in a sense, like dangerous. And I feel like that should just be a warning to all of us, that we say we want to like bring back our traditions, but we need to start, we need to actively start doing it. And I'm sure there are movements and everything, but I have not seen any. Which is why, in my opinion, I don't think, like, not much is happening with us. But I, like I said before, like, I really believe that it starts by, like, teaching it to the kids.
And hopefully people start learning the Chamorro language and culture, even the ones here in the States. So, mm-hmm. Before we end, I just need, like, can you just, there's some words that I think some of the people who are listening won't understand. You said fingini earlier.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fingini refers to when you greet an elder and you raise the elder's hand to your forehead, and would you say that you like sniff it in a sense?
Like sniffing, like,
it's a sign of respect. That's basically how we greet the elders. Like there, everybody like has their cultural practices. Whether it's like in Japan, like you bow. This is like how we respect and we fengingi. And you know, there's certain things you say with it, nyora, and then what's the other one?
And then you said academy. If you could just tell.
Oh, academy is Academy of Our Lady of Guam, and that's the all girl private high school that I attended.
And Harau.
Harau.
What the purpose of Harau was? When it was found? It was founded in 2005, and then what your experience was with how old you were?
Okay, I want to say I was fourth grade. Harau Cultural Academy. It was basically like this summer camp where parents can bring their kids to learn more about the culture. They had like different like activities planned throughout the day. They were able to like practice the language, learn how to cook stuff and cultural dancing and weaving. And like on Fridays, like we would go like on a field trip to like a beach and like, or it's like an ancestral ground, and just it was just a chance for the kids to get immersed in the culture that was like, that's been forgotten.
All right, thank you, Chess.
Thank you.
It's 2:24 p.m. and the interview on the, what is this called? On the thing says it's been an hour, 6 minutes, and 20 seconds.